Well, all week long you waited for it, and here it is. It's Friday. Can you believe it? Welcome to Friday, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder.
How are you, Bill?
You can't be bad on a Friday. If I was hit by a bus, I'd come in and I'd complain for a little bit, and I'd go, you know what, though? It's Friday, so what do I have to complain about?
I have nothing to complain about, but I have an observation I'd like to discuss with
please
people.
Please share it, please.
There are advertising billboards all over the place, obviously on billboards, on buses, on CTA trains. I saw one this morning that made me go,
did you steal that bit from Arsenio Hall? You did, didn't you? You stole this from Arsenio Hall.
I just wanted you to mention
his name. Look at everybody
in
the dog pound is looking at you funny now.
Everybody make me go, hmm. Yeah, is that what he did?
Something like that, yeah.
I can't say I watched Arsenio Hall that much.
All right.
There was an ad on one of the CTA trains or whatever that runs next to the Eisenhower.
Mm-hmm.
And it was advertisement for a thing called Thinks. THINX.
I don't know what those are.
I didn't either. And I saw Thinks, and I thinksed about it, and then it said period pants.
From which era? From the 1800s?
No.
1900s? Early 1900s?
From all periods.
I still don't know what those are.
Menstrual periods.
Really?
Period pants.
Special pants for these, huh? I didn't know such a thing existed.
So I went to their website, and it's they're a thing that I never heard of. They're period-proof pants.
How graphic is the ad that you saw? Like, is it just the name of the product, or does it explain what it is? What do they show you?
It's scantily clad women wearing Thinks period pants.
I'm trying to think if scantily clad women have ever been used in an ad campaign before. I don't remember. It's possible.
You can get access to their periodical content.
I like what they're doing there.
I kind of do, too.
That's inventive.
I didn't know if this was too risque to talk about, and you said no, because we're all adults.
Well, all right, so I didn't know such a thing existed. You would be closer to this story than I would be. Did you know that they made such a product?
No, I don't. Old. I menopausal.
Advertising already successful in that it created some sort of an awareness for a product that we didn't know existed. You remembered the name, so that's even better.
Yeah.
You're talking about it, so that's even better. So far, this is a success for them.
All right, well, it all began. We've been hard at work breaking the period taboo since January of 2014.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen it. It's such a public place.
Yes, it is. So a kid could potentially see this and say to their parent, somebody who's maybe too young to know exactly the ins and outs of what this is, and they could say to their parents, "What is that? I'm not familiar with that." And it could lead to a discussion that maybe a child isn't ready for. Is that what you're getting at?
Well, it just seemed it didn't upset me in any way. It just shocked me. I was okay with it because you know what, girls get menstrual periods.
Yeah. So are these pants? At the risk of sounding like I'm stereotyping, do these provide for a change in weight? Is that what they're doing?
Has anybody shown you on the doll how things happen?
They have not.
What exactly
are they doing?
Your menstrual period. So let's say they'd be absorbent.
Things are not as tidy. These pants would provide tidiness. Is that right or not right?
I believe in place of feminine products, you could just wear the period pants.
Oh, instead of?
That's what it appears.
No, not instead of, along with.
Yeah, I would trust you on this one.
I'm going to go with along with. I'm not saying instead of. I don't think so.
I don't know.
That's impossible. They wouldn't suggest that.
Let's go to the FAQ section.
All right.
Do you know what that stands for?
Frequently we ask questions.
Very good. Steve Bertrand must be embarrassed because he usually talks during the opening of the show.
I think pretty much Bill's carrying the weight here. No problem.
You're welcome.
How do Thinks work? Are they a replacement for my current routine?
And the answer is?
It replaces panty liners for good. And you're right, Bill. It has to be used in conjunction with.
Of course.
Well, I don't know.
Who's the doofus now?
Me?
Yes. You couldn't use them instead of. There's
well,
no
you
way.
Said, do they allow for weight gain?
Well, not weight gain, a change in weight.
What do you mean?
Well, isn't it possible that a person's your weight could change during that particular time of the month, couldn't it?
Not where you'd need a different size of underpants.
But
that's where underpants go.
The single tee. But if that was an issue, these pants could take care of that, right?
I guess. Right? I guess they're stretchy.
Don't women sometimes refer to the fact that at certain times of the month, they have to wear larger clothing? They do, right?
If you're pregnant.
Not just if you're pregnant.
Excuse me. Listen, my weight has fluctuated my whole life.
You know, there was such a nice Friday buzz going here.
Gone. Gone. I mean, with the wind.
Boom.
No.
Gone with the wind.
I mean, 312-981-7200. I don't think your weight fluctuates as much as having to have a pair of period pants, like, really.
So bloating is a myth. That doesn't exist?
Some people bloat, but how big do you think they bloat? They don't turn into the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Not to that extent, but I would imagine for some women it's a size. It's one or two sizes up, isn't it?
No.
It can't be?
It could be, I guess.
I bet it is.
Please, some woman call and help me here.
I bet it is.
312-981-7200.
I would love to prove that I know more about this than you.
That
would
be
fantastic.
I wouldn't doubt it.
I'm sure that there are instances, because I've heard women refer to that they these are pants that they can only wear, or this is an outfit they can only wear at certain times for this reason, this very reason.
I will say this. You live with three women.
Yes.
So you may know more than me, because I live with three guys and I don't get it anymore. So I'm probably more like a guy than you are.
It's like a wedding dress. You can only wear that at a wedding.
Steve has just not quite gotten it right, but almost. Almost.
All right. Well, it's called Thinks with an X, and it just kind of surprised me to see it up there just going on the train. Big, huge car advertisement.
So they have the word written out, obviously very large, the product name, but they don't show the actual product, or they do?
They show a somewhat scantily clad woman wearing these, and it says period pants.
Oh, all right. Does she look pleased with her purchase? Does she look like the Thinks have taken care of any potential?
She looks like she's doing yoga.
Oh, she does. Well, so there's another.
It's working.
There's another thing you can use them for yoga.
630 Bill says, "God help us women if we bloat two sizes."
Well, you would hope not, but I don't know what the averages are. I don't have that sort of facts and figures in front of me, but I bet there are people who do a lot more than others, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, but I'm telling you right now,
not that
if you go up two sizes, you're pregnant.
Oh.
Two sizes.
I just use that as an extreme example. I would hope that nobody goes up quite that big.
Hi, Rhonda. Can you help me out here?
I'll try.
All right. First of all, I was surprised to see this advertisement in the middle of downtown Chicago.
Were you shocked?
I kind of was. I'm not upset by it.
Right.
I'm kind of glad that, you know, girls have had periods their whole lives pretty much until menopause kicks in. So it's something we can talk about.
Yeah.
But you have a pair of Thinks?
I do.
What do you Thinks?
Well, I only wear them at night, sleeping.
Yeah.
And no other product and no leakage.
Really?
So, yeah.
How about that?
Really? So they work.
Yeah.
Do you find it weird that they're advertising on a train, a CTA train?
Kind of. Maybe a woman's magazine would be okay.
See, I wouldn't mind seeing it in a magazine. I didn't actually mind seeing this. It just kind of shocked me a little bit. It was a shock train.
Shocked me more. Mine were up. They were handed up to me by my niece.
Okay, that's
the wrong size.
Rhonda. No.
This would be a product you'd want to purchase new, I would think. Don't get these.
You wash them.
All right.
So
don't get these at a vintage clothing store.
Or Goodwill.
Or Goodwill, or even the dollar store, I would try not to get them at.
There's that, but I just thought I'd add a little bit
Well, thank you. And how long have you been a user of these particular pants?
I don't remember when I received the hand-me-up gift.
All right.
But you would recommend them?
Not during the day. I've never tried them during the day, but definitely as a nighttime product. Yes.
All right.
Awesome. Thank you for your
testimonial.
Thank
you so much, Rhonda.
Sure.
The beauty of having a radio show is we can ask somebody these questions. If you just went up to somebody on the train and asked these questions, they would slug you. They would just reach back and hit you as hard as they could.
Everybody wants to help.
Yeah.
Somebody says there might be a 3 to 5 pound difference, but not a size or two.
But 3 to 5 pounds is fairly significant over a couple of day period, isn't it?
I get where you're going.
No, I'm, you know what I meant. That's, you know.
10 pounds is probably a size.
10 pounds is a size. So
8 to 10 pounds might be a size.
So the potential is there to go up a half a size for a
It's all about size to you, isn't it?
No, well, just for the sake of this argument.
I think what Bill is saying is that if you were on the edge of your size,
yeah,
that a few pounds could push you.
But and Steve, I know Steve will back me up in this. Guys also have clothes that if you've put on a few pounds, they go to the back of your closet. You can't put those on. But then if you lose a few pounds, you go, I can wear this again.
Well, women have probably 5 different sizes in their closet.
Oh, that's a lot.
Because, you know, sometimes you go up, sometimes you go down, and then by the time you get back down, it usually goes out of fashion.
Right.
So, but guys do have, I think, 2 sizes. Do you have more than that?
I have some shirts that are medium, shirts and sweaters, and even some pants that are kind of medium, some are large, some are extra large. And that kind of depends on the cut of that particular manufacturer also. But there are...
How do Jordache run? Big or small?
I'm wearing those right now. They're wearing them pretty...
do you have just one size of jean shorts, or are there a few?
There's a couple.
Yeah.
There's a few.
You haven't gotten rid of those yet, the jorts?
No, actually, in all honesty, I was forced against my will to get rid of anything that even remotely looked like jean shorts are now out of my possession. I don't have any of them anymore.
It's about time.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are places that will take donated clothes, Bill.
They wouldn't even take these.
No?
I tried to return them, and they're like, eh.
I don't have 3 or 4 different size clothes in my closet.
Don't you?
No.
You don't have 2 pairs of jeans that are different sizes?
No.
Wow. Good for you.
He doesn't deviate at all
no,
from anything.
No, I don't think so.
He is tried and true.
I think you're right.
I mean, what you see is what you get with Steve Bertrand.
Yeah.
Eh.
You said that, not me.
All right, a quick break, and then a lot more show. If you'd like to jump in, we'd love to hear from you. We're 312-981-7200. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
All right, driving in this morning on the Eisenhower, I always laugh when I go by the Nerdery because I just think that's great.
What is that?
It's a software tech company, and I think it's great that it's called the Nerdery.
It is.
And then I'm looking at the L train coming into the city, and there's big advertisement going across 2 cars, and it was for Thinks, THINX. And
is
I'm like,
that a playoff of Spanx?
Well, that's what caught my attention, kind of.
I bet it is, right?
I'm like, Thinks? What? Do you think about wearing Spanx? I don't know. That honestly caught my attention. Mm-hmm. And then I looked, and it's beautiful women who are wearing some underpants. It's not a thong. It's not a bikini. Underpants.
That's fun to say, isn't it?
It is a funny word.
Yeah, I like to say that.
And then it said period pants.
Right.
And it just kind of caught my attention. Someone has texted, you're shocked about periods, but not about penile enhancement or Viagra billboards or commercials. Isn't it weird that that is more commonly talked about than a woman's menstrual cycle?
It is weird, and it's weird at how, like, when those ads first started, there was a little bit of an uproar, because a lot of times they'd be on during sporting events, and you'd hear people say, you know, I'm trying to watch a basketball game or a baseball game, and I got my 7-year-old there, and they're asking questions that I don't know if they're ready to hear the answers to.
Rafael Palmeiro's kids were asking questions because he was one
of
the first
endorsers. He was in them, right. So I guess after a while, you just become numb to it, and you just kind of go, okay, well, you know, that's what it is. But I see ads for stuff all the time, and I go, I'm amazed that this is just on primetime, and nobody seems bothered by it.
I don't think I don't think pharmaceutical companies should advertise drugs.
I'm okay with them advertising drugs, but maybe after a certain hour, right?
But I have a reason for it, because we shouldn't be going to our doctor and saying, I'd like to try Cymbalta.
Right.
Which
they keep suggesting in the ads. You should try this.
Yes.
Here's something you might want to try. And then you and your wife can take baths next to each other in a garden. Every time I see that, I would say, well, who's got 2 bathtubs in their garden?
Well, that's for the enhancement. I'm
right.
Talking about just any, like even allergy medications or rheumatoid arthritis. You shouldn't be going, I just find
that
wrong.
Let me just try that. It's not like it's chocolate. It's
right.
Not like various kinds of chocolate. these are drugs, but they go, you might want to try this.
And oh my God, the possible side effects is longer than the actual bath.
And you know what's funny is, not if things go well. What's funny is a lot of times the side effects are exactly what you're taking that drug for, or even worse.
Yeah.
You know, so you go, what, do I want to take a chance on those things just for this? I don't know.
I just know that there was an ADHD med that was a non-stimulant. And when I saw that, I'm like, oh, I don't want my kids taking stimulants. They had been on ADHD meds since second grade. Went in and asked my doctor about this, and they said, yeah, well, we can try that. Turned out to be completely the wrong medication. And then I was mad at myself for suggesting that.
Right.
So I don't think drugs should be advertised, but periods, yes.
I do like when they say at the end of an ad, and it's always for a various, some sort of a drug that can help you in some way, they say that AstraZeneca could help. Like if you're thinking about getting this, but you can't afford it, AstraZeneca can help. Because to me, that sounds like somebody from Battlestar Galactica, and I think it's so cool that they're willing to help. I always thought AstraZeneca was a bad guy, but no, he wants to help you, so he's a good guy. All right, we'll take a break. Steve has the news, and then after the news, Dana Gould, hysterically funny, will be joining us live in studio. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Are we having a disco party?
Wendy, it's our new Friday disco segment. Every Friday, we'll talk to one of the greats from the world of disco, and we want to start out with Dana Gould. Dana, of course, the host of Disco Time.
That's right. Dana Legs Gould.
Yep. What a magical time that was, Dana.
It was. It was just an ocean of lapels.
Do you and Denny Terrio still fight, or do you get along again?
We fight like brothers.
Well, then that's the best way to fight, isn't it? It really
indeed
is. Dana Gould is performing at Zany's this week. He has a new album out, Mr. Funny Man. It came out last month. There was a time, and I'm sure you subscribed to the same thing I subscribed to, where a comedy album was a big deal. You'd listen over and over and over and over.
Yeah, I still have many of my comedy albums. I collected them when I was a kid. That's why. I mean, it's so funny. You have to say, there's no vinyl release.
Yeah.
But having an album out sounds so much better than, you know, I'm dropping a download.
That sounds awful.
And an album technically is a collection of
it's
things.
It's a collection of, yeah. And it's,
so it works.
I'm very proud of it. They did it was weird. I was going to do a special.
Yeah.
And then I was going to do the special and then go to Atlanta for the summer and film my show, Stand Against Evil, which just premiered November 1st on IFC. And you can watch the first two episodes on IFC.com. And there was a problem with the venue. Like, we couldn't film it. Like, it was like really down to the wire, and like there was a product, they would have to move it. But for me to do it, it would have been a 4-month delay because I would have had to go to Atlanta, and then I would have had to go back on the road and get in shape. And I said, let's not do that. Let's just record it.
Would this have meant like rewriting new material just to keep it
fresh? Well,
it
would have been on the shelf for a summer, and then I would have had to take 2 months to get it going again, and I couldn't go right back on the road because I was in post-production. And I said, let's just do it. And there's a Kill Rock Stars is the label that I'm on. It's basically a punk label. And that's sort of my métier, and to use a very non-punk expression. And I get to work with them. It's one of the best like business relationships I have.
Oh, good.
It's great. Yeah, I really love them a lot.
So when you were a kid, you were a fan of the comedy albums. Give me one or two. What were the ones?
Oh, I had Class Clown. I had FM and AM. I had the Cheap. My brothers brought them back from the Army when I was really little. So
really?
Big Bamboo, the Cheech and Chong Yellow album, the Woody Allen double album I had.
The one where it just says stand up on it? Is that the one?
Yep. Yeah. And then and all the Carlin stuff. Carlin was always kind of my go-to guy. Because I grew up in a big Irish family in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And I have four brothers and a sister. And when George Carlin was on TV, it was one of the only times everybody in the house would shut up.
Really?
So I always equated him with Serenity.
Yeah.
Like, which is odd.
Yeah, it's exactly.
Did you get to meet him ever?
I got to know him, and it's one of the I've been super, super, super crazy lucky in meeting my heroes, which they always say don't do it.
Right.
But in my case, I've had a lot of success.
Never a disappointment in meeting one of the heroes.
No. My heroes are all real quality people.
So, yeah. Oh, good.
George Carlin, Albert Brooks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I get to work with Albert on The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Amazing guy. So freakishly talented.
Why wouldn't he use his name in the credits on The Simpsons? Why didn't he want his name out there?
Sometimes A. Brooks.
Yeah.
I know you have to ask him. I never asked him. But he's He's might be the one of the smartest people I've ever met in my life.
Do you know the story about Carl Reiner on The Tonight Show?
Yes.
Where they asked him.
Who's
Johnny
the funniest
Carson,
person you know?
And he said Albert Einstein.
Yeah, Albert Einstein, my son's friend.
Yeah.
He was friends with, he grew up with Rob Reiner.
And Albert Brooks wasn't famous at the time.
No, he was
just
a kid.
A
he was
kid.
13.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the funniest guy that Carl Reiner had ever encountered.
Yes.
Was a 13-year-old Albert Brooks.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I was very, very lucky. I just worked with Mel Brooks. And Mel and Carl Reiner still have dinner every night.
That's sweet.
Yeah. Mel comes into the office around 2 and works till about 5, 6. Then he goes and sees his grandson. And then he goes to Carl Reiner's house and they have dinner and watch and they have dinner and watch TV.
I love that. I love that family stuff. I really do.
Mel's great. And Mel's also crazy smart.
Yeah.
Like the Russian Revolution. And like, do you have 4 hours? And he'll just tell you the story of the Russian Revolution.
Would you call him, Mel Brooks, probably, if not our greatest storyteller, certainly among the top?
In the top five, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Him and Springsteen.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're pretty good at weaving a tale.
Yeah. So when you're around guys like that, guys you've idolized forever, what do you do? Do you
just shut up?
Yeah, you just listen.
It took me a while to figure that out, but yeah, I just shut up and listen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, I'm so lucky. I mean, I've got to work with all of these people that I really love and admire. And, you know, it's a rare opportunity and you make the most of it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I'm glad that I've had these opportunities when I was not so young. I couldn't appreciate it.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? Good. The timing was just right.
Yeah. Because I started doing, I'm still a pretty young man. I'm 53.
Yeah.
But I started when I was 17. So I've met everybody.
You know, it was always great. I never got to work with you, but sometimes I'd work at a club in town and I'd come and watch you. And I'm sure you've gotten this from other stand-ups. I always marveled at the fact that you took chance after chance after chance. You never played it safe. And
no.
That was so much fun to watch.
Look what it did.
You know, your name actually...
I just kept watching the safe comedians go on and work theaters.
Your name came up on Monday. We had Sven Gulli in the studio because it was Halloween. And he mentioned that he's going to be doing your podcast and you're going to return the favor.
Yeah, I'm going to go on Sven Gulli today. Again, that's the kind of show that I'm... My Stand Against Evil, the show I have on IFC, is a horror comedy. It's basically, what if Gillian Anderson was partnered with my dad instead of David Duchovny? And that's the show. It stars Janet Varney from You're the Worst and John McGinley from Scrubs.
Oh, wow.
Oh, I have to see this. IFC.
Yeah, Stand Against Evil. It's on Wednesday nights at 10. And we're in our second season.
Congrats.
And, first season started right up against Game 7 of the World Series.
Oh, great timing.
But fortunately, a lot of people DVR it. So we survived that. And yeah, I grew up watching and loving horror movies. And I was so excited because I have MeTV that I get Sven Gulli now. I knew about him and now I can watch him. And I'm just so happy that there's still a show like that on. And
right.
I always said, like, when you retire, I'll take over. And he's like,
really?
Yeah. He's like, are you sure you want to wear this much makeup? Like, I don't want him to retire. I want him to go for another 100 years.
But isn't it amazing?
I'll be Sven Gulli. I'll just slip right in.
That works.
That's
great.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Bill, I am just so amazed at the people that truly love and follow Sven Gulli. You've got Mark Hamill, who's a big fan.
Mark Hamill, Gilbert Gottfried.
Yeah. Doc Emmerich, of course. NHL Sports. I mean, it's crazy.
I was on Gilbert Gottfried's podcast last month, and we just talked about Sven Gulli the whole time.
Is that right?
Yep.
I want to see his documentary, by the way.
Oh, it's really amazing.
Is it?
And it's not, it's very, there's a lot of really serious stuff in it, really touching, amazing stuff. He's another guy that, like, oh my God, I'm friends with Gilbert Gottfried.
Isn't that crazy?
It's so weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember my friends and I would watch, when we were in college and cable just became a thing, we would watch him on TV. Like if he was on anything, we would watch it. And every time he comes in and he says my name and he says Wendy's name, I go, he knows who we are.
Yeah, that's, I know. It's so, it's, I actually had I got a chill up my spine once. My ex-wife was Paul Rubin's agent for a while.
Yeah.
And we went to see Paul at, and I'm still friends with all of these people.
Yeah.
I went to see Paul at the Groundlings. And this was 2004, 2005. You know, he's a huge star.
Yeah.
And we left. And we were walking down Melrose to our car. And we just heard, goodbye, Sue. Goodbye, Dana.
And it was Paul Rubens.
Paul Rubens.
Yeah.
And we both looked at each other like, Pee Wee Herman just called our name. It's crazy. And then we went to see the Pee Wee Herman show, and they did it live at the Nokia Theater. And then he came to our house for a fundraiser.
Wow.
like a couple weeks later. And our daughter just walked in the house. My daughter's like, Pee Wee, come on upstairs. I want to show you my room.
Just, just very casually.
Yeah. 10-year-old girl. Let me show you my room.
Do you think the appreciation, you know, the movies that Svengoolie shows, the horror movies, the classics, and some of the not classics, do you think that appreciation is lost with our generation? Will it carry over to our kids and beyond?
I know the generation behind me that still love all that thing, all those things. So it's my hope that will continue.
Yeah.
To me, I try to explain to people, the Wolfman and Frankenstein and Dracula, that's like Chuck Berry, Elvis Presley,
right.
Little Richard. It's like everything that you have now, you wouldn't have without them.
Yeah.
Right. And so to love it, you should know. And again, I sound like Jack Webb complaining about hippies, you know? but it's, you want to tell people, you know, believe it or not, cool stuff happened before you were born.
Right.
It's, I know it's hard to believe.
Right. But it did.
But culture didn't wait for you to show up to get interesting.
Dana Gould is here. He's performing at Zany's in Rosemont all this weekend. Zany's.com has all your ticket information.
Yeah.
We'll pick this up in just a little bit. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder along with Dana Gould on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
Dana Gould is in studio with us, comedian, writer. He has a new album out, Mr. Funny Man, which is downloadable right there on the internet. He's performing at Zany's in Rosemont tonight and all through the weekend. Go to zanys.com. All your ticket information is there. I've never asked you this, but I know how much you love Planet of the Apes.
Yes.
Explain your love for Planet of the Apes.
I can't. It's so
beautiful.
Funny. I was on Man Cow earlier today, and all we did was talk about Planet of the Apes.
Did you?
I'm a professional. I saw the TV commercial for it when I was like 4 or 5 years old, and there was just something about it that really rang my bell.
Yeah.
Now, later in life, when I was in therapy for some things, I have four older brothers that are big, giant athletes, and my dad's a big, you know, man. They're all men. And I was this scrawny little kid that liked horror movies, and... Because, well, then it would make sense that you related to those movies because it's a guy in a world where he doesn't fit.
And yeah.
Like, yeah, but it's also just King Kong dressed like Fonzie chasing Moses dressed like Tarzan. You know, it's just like there's just something about him. But I have so many weird connections to them now. It's insane.
Give me a weird connection or two.
I did not buy it for this reason, but I live in Roddy McDowell's house.
What?
You do? Well, now my ex-wife and my kids do, and I live up the street, but I bought it.
Oh my God.
And I ended up living next door to one of the head makeup artists at 20th Century Fox at that time.
Really?
And I was talking to him and I said, "You're Dan." We were at like a neighborhood parking meeting. And they said, "You're Dan Strepak. I know who you are." And I just told him his entire career.
Yeah.
And he knocked on my door the next day and gave me one of the overhead masks that the extras wore.
Oh.
He goes, "Here, I got these lying around my house. You should have this." And then I went out to Malibu Creek State Park where they filmed it and found a big chunk of the city that they'd bulldozed.
Really?
Yeah, I have all these weird things about it.
It's kismet.
It is.
It's strange. I just think if you love something long enough, you become associated
with it. Isn't Charlton Heston perfect?
He's amazing in that movie. And I'll tell you, you know, he gets a lot of flack because of his
the NRA stuff.
Leanings. Yeah. I did Bill Maher's Politically Incorrect with Mr. Heston.
Did you?
Before the HBO show, the old show.
Yeah.
And we disagreed on everything, you know, and he sat right across from me. And so he had said something about guns, and I said something that got a laugh, and they went to commercial. And it wasn't like I made fun of him, but I kind of made fun of his point.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And he leaned forward and put his hand on my arm, and I literally thought he was going to say, like, if you ever do that again, you know. And he just looked at me and said, "So you're an actor. Things are going well. You're on this, of course. You know, so that's good." And then he was, gentlemen, same. Went back to the second segment, blah, blah, blah. "These hippies don't know anything." And then commercial picked up the conversation where he left it off. After the show, I told him how much I love Planet of the Apes. He goes, "I'd be happy to send you a picture from the film if you'd like." And I said, I'd love that. And he says, "Oh, give me your address." And I wrote down my address on a piece of paper. 4 days later.
He did.
Manila envelope with a picture of him to Dana Best, which is like just old school.
That's
like,
so impressive.
Such a great. And And I know people that worked on SNL when he was there.
Yeah.
And they were just like, yeah, we all wanted to make him dinner. Like, he was the nicest guy in the world.
Do you remember on the 10th anniversary of Saturday Night Live, he came out on stage, uh-huh. He did this huge thing, and he read a letter from somebody that had sent to NBC saying, this is the worst thing on television. Yeah. It's going to ruin it. And it was signed Charlton Heston.
Yes.
He had sent that letter saying, you got to tear the show down.
Yeah. He was able to, we don't have this anymore, but he was able to laugh at himself.
Yeah. And, yeah.
If you're familiar with the movie, you know, the only thing that dates that movie is the hippie ape at the end.
Right.
The groovy hippie ape is the only thing that really dates it. Well, now that guy's a friend of mine.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah, his name is Lou Wagner, and he's a really talented actor, and he was in Planet of the Apes. And he said, you know, we were down in Point Doom in Malibu, and we could only eat lunch with straws.
Yeah.
Because we had all this makeup on and we didn't have any straws. And so Heston said, I'll get him. I need to exercise anyway. And he ran 2 miles. He ran a mile back to base camp, got a bunch of straws, and then ran the mile back.
Wow.
And he was the star of the movie.
Wow. Like,
you know who he could have asked to do that
everybody.
For him? Every single person that he'd lay his eyes on.
Yeah. That's so true.
And I learned a lot. Like, I don't consider myself famous in any way, shape, or form, but. Like the way I've seen Charlton Heston deal with people, the way I watched George Carlin deal with people, it was always they knew that this moment is not about me. This moment's about you.
Right.
And they were always so effortlessly graceful with people.
That's so important.
Isn't
There's
it?
Nothing worse than meeting someone that you idolize and they're a complete jerk to you.
Yeah, that would
it's the
that's,
worst.
That would be crushing. That would be crushing.
Danny, you said a second ago you're not famous.
Unless it's Buddy Rich.
If it was Buddy Rich, then you
would
get it.
You'd be disappointed if he wasn't.
Right.
He's notorious for being bitter toward everybody. You say you're not famous by any stretch, but there's got to be some solace in knowing that a generation of comics that worked alongside of you look at you as one of the beacons. You were one of the guys who just did everything you wanted to do.
Yeah, I'm famous. It's funny. My draw is other comedians, which doesn't really help because they get in free. When your entire draw is on the guest list, it really stinks.
Problem.
Yeah, that's if there's anything that I'm proud of is that I'm fairly sure that when I walk out of a room of my peers, nobody rolls their eyes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I
was there the night at the Chicago Improv that you auditioned for Saturday Night Live.
I have a story about this night.
Was it upsetting to you to not get Saturday Night Live? Are you okay with it?
I was okay with it.
Yeah.
But I have to tell you the story. And you tell me where I'm wrong.
Okay.
Okay. I'll save the names for at the end.
Okay.
I went on stage in Chicago auditioning for Saturday Night Live and had the set of my life.
Yeah, like, you did very well.
I did very well.
Yeah.
Then the second guy went on, did not do that well.
Yeah.
And the third guy went on and really didn't even try. The third guy went on, I just kind of hacked around.
Yeah.
So I'm flying back to LA with these other two guys thinking, I just got Saturday Night Live.
Right.
And I'm looking at them thinking, Chris Rock, Adam Sandler, you'll be okay. You'll get your time.
Yeah.
Oh,
but this is about me.
Yeah.
Don't get too close. And it didn't work out.
It didn't work out that way.
But I had just met the woman that I was. I had just started dating the woman that I would eventually marry and have three kids with.
Not
so
bad.
So
it was a win-win.
Everything happens for
everything
a reason.
Everything was great.
Do you believe that?
No.
No.
Okay. Have you seen that flood footage?
Yeah,
just so
agreed.
You know, I have.
But I was always cool. But I was always. I had a good career and I was in love and I was happy. And so, no, I never. But the funny story is I've told that story a bunch of times.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My wife went on. Is now runs Annapurna Pictures television department and my ex-wife now. And at the time she was the head of HBO and she went to New York and had dinner with Chris Rock about something. And then she came back and said, honey, you know that story you tell about Saturday Night Live?
Yeah.
I go, yeah. She goes, it's true.
Oh yeah, it's true.
It's like, well, I haven't been lying for 10 years.
Can I tell you another piece of the puzzle? I had dinner with Adam Sandler after that night.
And oh, okay.
We all went out to dinner and he was sitting next to me and I said, what do you think? And he goes, well, Dana Gould got it for sure. And beyond that, nobody knows. So everyone was positive you got it and somehow you didn't get it.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Well, from what I understand, that's nice to know. I didn't know that part.
Yeah.
I think that the reason I didn't get it was that I was very well formed. Like, I was already baked.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that Lauren,
no molding
Lauren
could happen.
Pointed people that he could sort of mold into the show.
Sure.
And I don't think he's wrong. You know, I wanted to be the lead in Stand Against Evil, and I thought I would just do it in makeup. And
right.
You know, and Pete Aronson at IFC went, no.
Doesn't work that way.
We're going to pick up the show, but we want the star to be a star. Yeah. And I could hear the 25-year-old me going, forget it. And I could hear the 50-year-old me going, who do you like?
Yeah, right, right.
I got to check out Stand Against Evil, IFC. I can't wait to see it. I'm going to binge watch it.
Great to see you again.
Great to see you.
Anytime you're here, please come by. Oh, I hope. Well, thank you. It's Dana Gould. Go see him at Zanies in Rosemont. You got shows tonight. You got shows tomorrow night. Zanies.com has all your information right there. Thanks again, Dana. Great to see you. A quick break and then some news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right. We are back in action. It's 11:06. We're doing a changing of the guards right here. I don't know if I embarrassed our next guest or if I pleased him, but when I shook his hand and met him, I said, I love you.
Oh, you were very honest.
Was that okay? Is that a good...
I had the wrong person.
Oh.
the lovable Dom Herrera joins us live in studio. Dom, people do love you. You can't deny it.
I love them, too.
It's a mutual
Dana
love.
Dana Gould was just here.
Yeah.
If you can't see me, go see him.
You know what? It's like that scene from
what is that?
What's the Christmas movie? Miracle on 34th Street, where Santa Claus says, if we don't have it here at Macy's, go to Gimbel's. You just did that.
Yeah,
that was so nice of you.
I think there's millions of people here. We could fill up a couple of comedy clubs.
Right.
Dana came to my house one time, the one and only time.
Yeah.
And I had one of those little like kind of speakeasy things that you look through.
Yeah.
And I opened it up, and a moth flew in his ear. Right? So... All he did was he was stomping, he was screaming and stomping, and the guy took him to the hospital, and that was the only time he was ever at my house.
Really?
So we're in Austin this spring, and he says something about the moth, and I'm thinking, what, is he crazy? I don't know what he's talking about. Then it hit me.
That's the time. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's traumatic. They had to go to the hospital to get the moth taken out.
It was that bad.
It's like a Twilight Zone episode, or was that Night Gallery, the earwig thing?
Night Gallery had an earwig episode.
Ah.
Yep, yep. Dom Herrera is performing in town at the Comedy Shrine in Aurora. You got shows tonight. You got shows tomorrow night. You always said early on, someday I'm going to work Aurora, and now you're there.
Well, you know, one time I worked with Frankie Valli in Aurora.
Did you?
And that's why I wanted to come back, because he said, Dom Herrera in Aurora. Oh, that's a lot of R's. Frankie Valli.
He was right. He had a way of figuring things like that out,
he really
Frankie
did.
Valli.
He's a clever man.
How have you been? Everything good with
good.
You?
Good, yeah. It's funny that you say that. To me, at this point in my life, I'm sharing my gift. You know, what I give back to humanity. I've been given enough. I don't need any more.
Yeah, that's true.
Look
You're
at
so
me.
Unselfish.
But that's what I love about me. And hold that thought. I want to tell you something else.
Yes, what else?
That really... For the credits I have,
yes.
I am so down to earth.
Yes.
I don't
You've
know
not
why.
Let success spoil you.
I treat people like yourselves, for instance.
Yes.
Like you're equals. Yes. Let's face it.
We're not.
You were never on Seinfeld.
No.
No.
You were never on Barnyard.
No.
No.
Were you on Barnyard?
Yeah.
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, it was a Nickelodeon cartoon. As time passes, you know what my hottest credit is now?
What is it?
I tried it out in Cleveland to see how they would react. Hey Arnold.
Oh, I loved Hey Arnold.
Yeah, here you go.
Hey, Seinfeld is fine, but Hey Arnold, that's not bad at all.
I could live without Seinfeld, but not the football head.
I share a credit with you. Do you remember where you and I worked together? What TV show you and I did together?
Academy Awards?
No, we were never on the Academy Awards together. That's an excellent guess.
You were a presenter, were you?
No. No.
Give me a hint.
You and I did a pilot. For a late night show.
Jeff Martyr.
Yep, Martyr at Midnight.
Martyr at Midnight. Wow.
We run that together.
Where's that show?
We don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
No.
Sorry,
they
guys.
They might still pick it up. We don't know.
He probably has one of those ham radios that could pick us up. No, but the guy, he never recovered from that.
Jeff didn't?
His kids want to be a stand-up, and I was taking him in and tutoring him.
But he didn't become a stand-up?
No, he's still trying. He's in college.
He?
But
yeah.
Jeff was a guy that really had everything going.
Oh,
it just shows
you
how hard this business is. And if I had taken one rejection, I would have been out of it long ago. I got fired from a show that was written for me.
Did you?
Yeah. I tell you, after seeing you read, you're not right for the part. And another time, Rodney Dangerfield gave me a part in a movie, and the character's name was Irera. He pronounced it Irela, and I got they had a better actor replace me. which I love. Like I couldn't. And the thing is, the guy really was better than me, so I couldn't argue about it. I just did some other part.
Do you remember the story? They made a movie, a TV movie, about the life of Freddie Prinze, and Freddie's best friend was written into the movie, and then the guy who was actually the guy went in to read for the role of himself.
And didn't get it.
He did not
get it.
Is
that Freddie Asparagus?
No.
Real name?
There was a comedian named Freddie Asparagus.
I don't think
Cubby Broccoli.
I don't think his real name was Freddie.
Together.
I don't think his real name was.
I can't remember who the comedian was, but he read for the role of himself, and they just go, no, not even
really?
Close.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I remember when I got fired, and this is the cool thing about being a stand-up. When I got fired from that show, it hurt, you know, and
sure.
I went to the Comedy Store and did a set, and I felt, well.
Everything was okay.
And the very first time I did the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, killed, not to brag.
Mm-hmm.
And
no brag.
First, I don't brag.
No.
First time I did it, I was so upset that it was, it was like so hard to do.
Yeah.
I wanted to run into the hills of Burbank and start a new life.
Oh.
You know, but I mean, it went fine, but I just wanted to get it over with. And I went and did a set that night too.
Yeah.
We're talking about how medicinal that can be.
It
know?
Is, isn't it? It really is. What was it like at the time to get the approval of Johnny Carson? There was probably nothing better on the planet, was there?
You know, it's funny. I was talking, you know, Joe Rogan?
Yeah, sure.
I was talking to him about, because he's doing Madison Square Garden, the small room, 8,000. Oh. Poor guy. He'll get there. But we were talking about it. Like, in those days, you know, you had to be lucky and seize that opportunity, because now with social media,
mm-hmm.
people can make themselves celebrities,
mm-hmm.
you know, by getting hit in the testicles with a wiffle ball bat.
Oh, I know.
But, you know, that kind of, I mean, when I did the Tonight Show, there was only a couple of vehicles, Dangerfield's HBO specials.
The Young Comedian Specials.
Young Comedian Specials and the Tonight Show, and of course, Letterman later on.
Yeah.
But, it wasn't, I mean, now, my God, you know.
You were on one of the Young Comedian specials, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So for guys who don't remember this, that was a catapult.
It made us instant draws.
It did.
I went to Atlanta after it. I had no idea. I'm in my own usual foggy oblivion. And I go, why is this place so crowded? They go, you.
Mm-hmm.
I go, what do you mean? It was like a Tuesday night, because that's when we worked from Tuesday to Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Don't even listen to me on that Tuesday to Wednesday.
The bosses at the comedy club.
The boys are here. Hey, he can work that much. But when I went there, and then they had, like, I had this joke about Joey Bag of Donuts, Little Petey, Big Petey.
Right.
And they had, like, there were a softball team with all those names in the back. I go, oh, my God. It just hit so, because everybody watched it. It was like the Soprano of that day. They would watch it and talk about it on Monday, you know, the old coffee thing.
Sure.
Whatever, you know.
Well, it's the first time America saw you. It's the first time they saw Jim Carrey. It's the first time they saw Stephen Wright.
Seinfeld
was
Roseanne.
On one. Yeah.
Sam Kennison.
Look at that lineup right
he
there.
He knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
Can I talk to you about I'm Dying Up Here? I absolutely love that Showtime show.
I would love to, but I got to go. Hold the thought, will you?
Listen, I just want to know, you mentioned being on Carson.
I want to go back out in the lobby and wait another half hour.
I don't love you anymore.
Treated like dogs. No, go ahead, of course.
You talked about doing Johnny Carson. Is it all truly about the couch, like is portrayed in I'm Dying Up Here?
No.
It's not?
No, because the thing about the couch is, there was one guy who did so much overtime that he got the couch because they didn't want to screw the guest on after him at a time. So there were different reasons for it. Some of it had to do with timing, you know. So
could you hear Johnny, like when you were doing the joke, you could hear him laughing,
That was really incredible because, you know, a lot of things go through my mind when I'm doing it. Like, you're not always there every second.
Yeah.
And I start drifting. I go, that's Ed McMahon and Johnny Carson laughing at me. I hear them. They're only 15 feet away. And I used to do a joke about Ed, about, you know, this is before I had done The Tonight Show. I said, I did Star Search.
Yeah.
And I said, I called him, I said, I don't know what to say, 35 years in the business. Do I call him Ed, Mr. Ed, Eddie, Mr. Eddie McMahon, Mr. E, Mr. You big, fat, lucky, talentless hump, kissing Johnny's butt for the last 30 years, you Budweiser sucking, Alpo slinging nothing. What do you do?
Yeah, go with that one, by the way. That's the one to go with.
So I did that, and his daughter actually finally told me he loved the joke.
Really?
But the first time I met him was on The Tonight Show, and he was a big guy, and he pulled me towards him. But it was actually a warm thing, not aggressive. But I thought, oh, Ed McMahon's going to sucker me right before I go into Tonight Show. What a story that'll be. But it was cool.
What a night. I was fortunate enough on several occasions to have him in studio and interview him. A nicer guy
impossible
to find.
Yeah,
right?
He appreciated his lot in life. You know, he really used to be on commercials in Philly when I grew up. him and Dick Clark and those guys, you know.
But didn't you think, Dom, that behind the scenes, he and Johnny probably palled around a little, and they didn't at all?
They didn't, did they?
No, no.
Yeah, that's weird. You know, I mean, I guess they get, it's like a marriage. They get tired of each other every night.
Yeah, yeah, maybe.
The same thing.
But it's so sad because we thought, well, Doc and Johnny and Ed, after the show, they'd probably go and hang out somewhere. Never happened. No. Too bad.
I don't think Johnny was a big hanger. I think he liked to play tennis. And when he walked away, he really walked away. Now, you could see Letterman getting itchy again. He's all of a sudden Moses Letterman, whatever his name is. And then he parted the Red Sea. No, it was the Dead Sea.
Dom Herrera is here.
Does he look hideous or what?
Well, it's not a good look.
It doesn't look like him.
Although very popular in baseball now to have all those unkempt beards.
Yeah, and it started a few years back, but it really, I mean, Zach Galifianakis was the first one of my generation guys that did it. And he kind of made it a signature thing. Now everybody does. I don't even know if he shaved. You know, he might have shaved it.
Martin Van Buren also. love the big long beard. Well,
how do you know who my favorite president was? I thought you were going to say something about Calvin Coolidge.
No, he's all right. But that man, Martin Van
you
Buren.
You should have seen him start a line dance at a wedding.
Was he great? Come
beautiful.
On.
Beautiful.
Dom Herrera is here. Go see Dom Herrera. He's at the Comedy Shrine in Aurora. You got shows tonight. You got shows tomorrow night. ComedyShrine.com has your ticket information. We'll pick this up in just a moment. It's Bill and Wendy along with Dom Herrera on WGN. One of our favorite comics, Dom Herrera, live in studio. He's performing at the Comedy Shrine in Aurora tonight and tomorrow. For tickets, call 630-585-0300.
Why don't I just do some more material and they don't have to bother?
Do you want to do it right here? They don't have to travel.
They don't have to get out and go to play the drink minimum.
Such a hassle.
Let me do it. Can I
get it going?
Maybe,
yeah,
go. Maybe do 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah, you want to do that? That's fine. I'll give you the light at 13 so you'll know when it's time to stop. How many years have you been doing this now?
What's today?
Today is November 3rd, 2017.
45 years.
Have you been doing this
45
years?
I don't know. It's 1980. Gotta be close. What's 1980?
Well, so you're looking at 37 years.
Holy.
I'm telling you, it's almost.
Holy Rabbi, holy Batman. You know, you think I'd have more material by now.
You don't need more material. Well, what has changed in the early days as to today in terms
a lot
of the
has
audience?
Changed.
How is the audience different?
Well, first of all, the other night I walk in, it was Persians fighting cancer, right? Yes. I go into the lab. This is not funny.
No, it's not funny.
but my friend Maz Jobrani was the host.
Yeah.
And we were talking about like when I started out, stand-up comedy was basically mostly Jewish guys who were also writers.
Yeah.
And some black guys and maybe an occasional something else.
Mm-hmm.
Now you got like Russian peasant woman night.
Right.
I mean, there's everything. The major chain is the diversity.
I mean,
it's incredible. And you know what's funny? I was talking to another friend of mine, and we were saying about how people try and separate us. We get along.
Yeah.
We get along. There's no like black table, white table, Spanish table. We just sit wherever, you know, upstairs at the Laugh Factory. We got our own bar at the Comedy Store. I mean, not that everybody's hugging each other all the time, but we really do, you know,
have
fun.
But when you came about, there was this surge of guys of different ethnicities. Like, I remember Johnny Yoon was the first Asian guy. Do you remember his opening word every day?
What?
He would go, hero. Like, he would just come out and say, hero, and the crowd would go nuts. And then there was a Native American comic, and his opening line was, hi, how are ya? Hi, how are ya? Hi, how are ya?
Remember Glenn Hirsch?
Yes.
Glenn Hirsch, he was a Jewish guy. He was half Indian, half Italian. He would go, how you doing?
Right.
had he written another good line, he'd still be working.
That was the high point of his act.
It was. This guy's going to be good.
Nope.
Hey, that was it. No, he's a friend of mine, but he's doing cruises.
Is he? Yeah.
Talk about sailing adrift.
Yeah.
I think I'd hang myself before I did a cruise. I you know the Impractical Jokers?
Yeah, I love those guys.
Me too. Well, they're buddies of mine, and they asked me to go on the cruise a couple years ago. And I had fun when I worked with them. We're on stage. We're drinking Jameson. We're really having a ball. But, boy, I'm not one for the deep, dark ocean waters in the middle of the night. Because I keep thinking, well, what'll happen if I jump, you know?
Yeah.
Will they find me? Well, you know. Just a normal guy.
You always think about the it's a remote possibility, but you think about what if Somali pirates decide that this cruise ship is their
especially
next...
if they got in the Caribbean.
Right. Right.
They got some good ships now.
Right. Yeah.
Or is it Caribbean? Excuse me.
That's all right. You're fine.
It's either or.
What have you not done yet that you've always wanted to do career wise? Is there something you've always strived to do?
Well, there's a certain woman in here I always wanted to sleep with. But I never got the chance because she never gets sleepy. Oh, I waited out.
You are a romantic, Dom Herrera. You're very romantic.
What have I not done? Geez, not really anything.
You write a book? Have you ever written a book? Do you want to?
No, I was talking about that. I'm just too lazy. I shot to the middle and I clung there.
You're comfortable in the middle.
I'm very comfortable. I mean, you know why? Because you have people saying, yeah, you should be bigger. You should have this. I'd rather them not than, how'd you get this?
Yeah.
What are you doing up here?
I saw you one night on Craig Ferguson had him, he was crying. He wasn't just laughing. You had him crying.
I loved working with him. He was the best talk show host I ever worked with because he was improvisational.
Yeah.
And one night I came out and he introduced me. He was working this weekend, going to be at the Denver Comedy Works. So I get on stage, I go, you got a really crack team here, Craig. I says, I worked there last week. I said, but I'm actually so hot in the business, they have to post-date my gigs because there'll be riots. And he goes, well, let's stop it. We'll just stop it and we'll start filming it over again. I said, I'm not stopping. I got a spot at the Laugh Factory in an hour.
Yeah.
This is just another gig for me. And and the audience could tell we were having fun, but fake fighting.
Yeah.
I said, go over there in your high horse. I mean, it's not like 6'5 is a big enough. He's like Letterman. He has to have a seat that's higher than you. Makes you feel like a munchkin. You know, I was going to do a munchkin impression, and I decided against
it. No, better not to do it.
Yeah.
It's so funny how that became a thing on talk shows, that the host is elevated. And I don't know, did you ever see the one that Andy Kaufman did where he sat in like a lifeguard chair?
No,
he was
no,
so
that's
much
funny.
Higher than the audience.
He was so funny.
Carson didn't do that.
No, Carson was on the same level, wasn't
Letterman
he?
Letterman didn't. Letterman's probably 6'3 or 4 anyway. Oh, I needed that.
I don't know.
That's an interesting question about, I never think about, maybe having a hit series financially would have been the coolest thing, but I never really needed to be the star of anything.
No?
Yeah.
So in the days when they would come to Gabe Kaplan and they'd say, we'll build a show around your character, or Tim Allen, or Jerry Seinfeld, you must have, at some point, they must have said, let's sit down and iron it out. What will the show be if we center it around you? That probably happened once or twice,
well,
right?
Yeah, more than that, actually. But Bruce Willis was, to be a name dropper, he was like, he's been my friend for a long time, and he was the one that really pushed for me to have a series. But he wanted me to have a series, ironically enough, based on that character who you now see in I'm Dying Up Here.
Mm-hmm.
That that guy.
Kind of a Catskills type comic.
Yeah, and yeah. I just didn't think that he could carry a series, but I was not going to say no to Bruce because he says, yeah, I'll do guest star things. We'll try and you know, and the this is so much weird, so weird about the business. He was under contract to Fox Television and Fox Movies, and they didn't like their own writers.
Really?
Yeah. So they wanted to start all over again. And Bruce says, what do you want to do? And I says, I don't know. You know, he goes, why don't we write it? I go, we can't write it. I said, you're a movie star and I'm a comedian. We're going to sit down and write. I mean, it was really stupid of me at the time, but that's one of the regrets I have.
That's
about
the regret.
Being lazy.
Yeah. Is he a good guy to be friends with, Bruce Willis?
He's a great guy.
Is he?
Yeah. And see, you know, then I hear stories about him, like Charles Barkley. Of like my friends who have become famous, he became so much more famous than when I knew him in Philly.
Yeah.
But like I hear stories about them. I heard, you know, with Bruce being rude to people at casinos and stuff. I don't know what's true. I never seen that side of him.
Right.
You know, I mean, I hate to think that.
Yeah. He seems like a nice guy.
Everybody has a bad day, though.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they magnify it, too.
Tell him to straighten up, Dom. Next time you see him, tell him to straighten up.
Tell him to get it together.
Yeah, please.
Bruno better behave.
She has to. Dom Herrera performing at the Comedy Shrine in Aurora. You got a couple shows tonight. You got a couple shows tomorrow night. If you want more information, 630-585-0300 or their website, comedyshrine.com.
And Dana Gould is also in town.
And Dana Gould's in town.
You might enjoy
spillover.
Better than me.
You are so funny.
Thank you so much,
Thanks
Dom.
A lot. Good
great
to see you. Thank you.
A quick break, some news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Always a pleasure to hear you, Doma T. Thank you so much. We are going to talk television right now Kurt Wagner is taking a week off, and in his place, we're going to talk to the managing editor of TV Guide. This is Alexander Zalbin. Alexander, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
There's a couple things.
All right. First of all, I hate to start out a segment whining, and this is going to sound like I'm whining.
No.
I love Stranger Things, okay? The first season, and the second season was released. I'm up to episode 7, was telling my husband, I need to catch up. We've got to watch this. And I was reading a little something, and I just got a big fat spoiler right in my face. I'm so
what
bummed.
Happened? What happened? There's some big reveal that you weren't aware of that now you're aware of.
Well, I can't. You haven't even started watching season two.
Not yet.
But the ratings are through the roof. Alexander, people were waiting for. Was it last Friday or last? It was Halloween, wasn't it?
Yeah, it came out right before Halloween. Now, the thing that's tricky about Netflix ratings is they don't actually release ratings. So multiple companies have figured out a way of trying to maybe guess how many people have been watching their shows. Nielsen came out, I believe it was yesterday, with a study that they had done guesstimating how many people watched Stranger Things. And they believe, I think it's 15.8 million people watched the first episode. And it trailed off a little bit from there as the episodes went on. I'm sure people like you are still catching up on it. But that's huge. I mean, that would make it one of the biggest shows on television, and I believe the biggest show on cable, if it was on cable. So we thought part of the reason that Netflix was hiding it was that their ratings were lower than you expected. Turns out they're bigger. There you go.
You know what I use as a barometer, Alexander? The show had only been on for a season, and I can't tell you how many kids came dressed as characters from Stranger Things for Halloween at my house. So that means someone's watching it and enjoying it.
Yeah, I saw a young Joyce wandering around on Halloween, saw a bunch of Elevens. The show is huge, and it's everywhere, and it's going to go on for another 2 seasons, so it's not stopping anytime soon.
All right, well, here's my question to you also. Again, don't mean to sound like I'm whining. I'm a Twin Peaks fan as well, and when Twin Peaks was released, the whole season dropped at once, just like Stranger Things. Why can't they do it week by week, which gives you a little more time before spoilers are revealed?
You know, I think this is kind of a new way of the world. Netflix has changed the game pretty immensely with binging. There's a lot of people that have tried doing it both ways. Freeform does this with a lot of their shows, where they'll drop all of the episodes and then also broadcast them week to week. The TBS did that with Search Party for the first season as well, though they're doing it differently with the second season. You know, I think it's ultimately we're in a, not to get too haughty or anything, but we're in a sped-up society where people need answers and they need them now. I mean, if you take a look at Marvel movies, the Thor movie comes out today, and I saw spoiler articles about it 2 weeks ago. They're like, here's the surprising cameo you can't believe in Thor. So it comes from movies, it's trickled down to TV, and it's kind of how things are. So spoilers are coming, I guess. Do you think, Alexander,
a generation ago people would have done this with I Dream of Jeannie? Would they have just, like, as soon as they dropped all
what
the episodes?
What spoilers do you get in there?
Oh, you know, Major Nelson does some crazy stuff. You don't know.
Well, I do think that's part of the difference. When you look at shows back then, they weren't structured the same way. They weren't structured.
You could watch them out of sequence. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So here it's much more plot-driven. It's much more serialized. I mean, you look at a show, and maybe this is jumping ahead what we're talking about, but you look at a show like Star Trek on now. It used to be week to week they would just have different adventures, and the new Star Trek is heavily serialized. You know, they're still episodic, but at the same time, they have this big overarching story where you have to watch all of the episodes to understand what's happening. So that's part and parcel with the binge product, and for better or for worse, if you really want to avoid those spoilers, you got to watch all 13 episodes in the first 13 hours. That
you know, I don't know if you're a fan of The Blacklist, but last year on The Blacklist, a major character we were led to believe was no longer with us. Mm-hmm. We find out later that that may not be the case. And I kept thinking, if they had released all these at once, people would have already been on the internet saying, hey, don't worry, that character's coming back. So sometimes it works that they do it one at a time. Sometimes it works that they do them in bulk.
Yeah, I think I'm still a big fan of week to week, as long as you can structure that way. One of my favorite viewing experiences of all time was Lost, and I loved it for watching the episodes, but also just the week between the episode would be
to digest
it. My colleagues would just come up with theories and talk about things. So that's certainly missing in the binging experience, but it has its plus sides as well.
And I certainly enjoy a good binge. That's how I watch things. But with new shows, you expect to have a little breathing room.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Things have gone the other way, and to be honest, I don't know if they've quite worked as well. Hulu is a binging platform, but they'll release shows week to week, and it always feels a little strange when they're doing that. You know, you get to the end of an episode on Hulu, and you think, wait, I can't watch the next one. What's happening?
The world is broken.
Exactly. But, you know, they're, like I said, as long as they're playing with the structure the right way, as long as they're not doing an episodic show and then letting you binge it, versus a serialized show, it can work both ways.
Explain this to us if you can, Alexander. We just saw the ratings. Wendy and I were looking at the ratings yesterday for The Walking Dead. They're two episodes into the new season, and the ratings have not been very good. They're still not terrible, but they're not as good as they were a couple of years ago. What do you think is going on there?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that are contributing to that. I mean, first of all, it's still one of the biggest shows on TV, not just cable TV, but TV, period. Yeah. They've dropped dramatically, but all of TV has, frankly, not to do my TV guide business, but all of TV has dropped dramatically in the ratings. You know, people, there's more on, things are more fractured, so there's less must-see, have-to-watch-it-right-now in this broadcast because you can watch so many different ways. So that's one thing you could point to. I think certain people, even fans, would point to quality of the show has changed. You know, you could argue whether it's worse or it's better, but certainly the focus has changed from a survival drama to they're mostly in one place, you know, and they're fighting humans now instead of zombies. Mm-hmm. And they've introduced all these very over-the-top cartoonish characters like Ezekiel, who talks like a king and has a tiger, or Negan, who carries his club and curses up a storm. So it's a very different show than it was in season one. But I think the thing that most people would probably point to is the season 7 premiere.
Yes,
where,
absolutely.
They killed Glenn and Abraham. There was so much hype and so much buildup on that, and it was so bloody and so violent. I think a lot of people either looked at that as a point to jump off or spent the rest of the season, which, to their credit, they did very purposely try to make it an exploration of sadness, you know, an exploration
and desperation.
Of what happens afterwards. Yeah, of desperation. And I think by the end of that season was over, people were so exhausted, they thought, well, I don't need to watch that again. I'm good.
That's where my husband jumped off. The first episode, the season premiere of season 7, at the finale of season 6, just hearing the sounds was horrific enough. We didn't need to view it. And it was disturbing, but I hung in there. And now so far, I'm liking the new season. Bill?
Yeah, I agree. It's a little bit of a shame that people have jumped off, because this is, if you read the comics, this is the best storyline in the comic. It's all-out war. It's huge groups fighting, epic action sequences. So it's a lot of fun. It's, like I said, a very different show than it was in season 1, but it's enjoyable in a different way. So my hope is that fans will come back or find it by, you know, binging it like we were just talking about.
Makes sense. Alexander Zelbin is here. He's the managing editor of TV Guide.
I just have one more Walking Dead before we take a break and continue talking. There is not enough Michonne for me, because she is badass and she is sitting back and not doing anything. So I hope her character blossoms once again.
Yeah, I think something that they do with these seasons, pretty much since Scott Gimple, who's the showrunner on the show, has taken over, is they tend to focus in different places. You know, they're not quite doing one character per episode, but Michonne has been on the bench a little bit, but I feel pretty confident she's going to come off that bench pretty soon.
Sweet.
You know who I want to see more of? Ralph Malph. I love Ralph Malph.
And another thing, you know, I'm a big fan of Chris Hardwick and the Talking Dead as well, and I'm noticing that a lot of other shows are doing these little recap and like This Is Us actually has a very minuscule one, and I like that because people want to talk about the episode when it ends.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of discussion about how much we need after shows, and certainly I think Chris Hardwick is an expert at it. He's really good, and that's also Talking Dead is one of the biggest shows on television, which is kind of insane. But this is my very particular TV journalist perspective, but I love watching The Walking Dead, and then while I'm writing my thing about Walking Dead, having Talking Dead playing in the background so I can kind of, you know, check in and get
like Christmas music,
things like
isn't
that.
It?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's
exactly
comfortable.
Like Christmas music.
It is. Alexander Zelbin, managing editor of TV Guide, is on the line with us. If you have any questions or comments, we're at 312-981-7200. We'll pick this up in a minute. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Alexander Zelbin. He is the managing editor of TV Guide. Alexander, last night my family and I were watching Life in Pieces, enjoying it very much. And they show a promo for Stephen Colbert's show. The upcoming show has Whoopi Goldberg on. And then tomorrow night, they said, Jeremy Piven. And my family and I looked at each other and we went, that's bizarre. I wonder if that'll play out. And then a few hours later, CBS announces that Jeremy Piven will not be a guest on Colbert. Mm-hmm. Too distracting. What's going to happen there?
But previously recorded, correct?
Well,
it was recorded on Monday.
I don't know that it was recorded on Monday. Like, they show a clip from him from a previous appearance on the show. I don't know if they had already.
I thought they taped it, and then when the news came out Monday about these allegations,
maybe
we should ask Alexander.
What do you think, Alexander?
Yeah,
what's going on there?
That's correct. Yeah, it was the appearance was taped on Monday. There, like a lot of folks in Hollywood, there were some allegations against Piven. He's denied the allegations. I'm sure we'll find out one way or another more about this as this continues. But at the current time, his interview is no longer going to be on the Colbert show. That's kind of the long and short of it.
So with his show, he has a new show that's on CBS. Will they continue to run that, or is it too controversial to run right now? What do you think?
I mean, that's a good question. There's these situations have been dealt with in a lot of different ways right now, and I don't really have any inside info or anything like that. But as you mentioned, I mean, it's a CBS show. Colbert is a CBS show. So certainly they're aware of the situation, and I believe there's I'm just actually looking at a quote from one of our stories. We are aware of the media reports and looking into the matter. That's according to the network. Something like House of Cards at this point, is that show is dead because of the allegations against Kevin Spacey.
And was there one more season that was supposed to happen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were, I believe, filming another season of House of Cards. Initially, they said they were going to look into it and put things on hold, and that would be the final season. And now they're just not going ahead with it. They may look into a spinoff, which would include some of the same characters, which honestly would be a nice thing to do, because something that folks don't often think about when they get into these situations is there's hundreds of people working on the crew. So because of the terrible actions, the absolutely reprehensible actions of one person, a lot of people end up without a job. So hopefully they do go forward, even if it is with one season, with a spinoff of that. As for Wisdom of the Crowd, I think we're going to have to stay tuned and see.
So for all the House of Cards fans that have watched it over the years, that storyline will just kind of fade away, right? Is Frank Underwood, is that his name? That'll just go unanswered. It'll just be done.
Yeah, I mean, unless they decide that financially there's going to be some reason to do an abbreviated season, certainly with something like Sense8, which wasn't a huge hit for Netflix, but due to fan outcry, they decided to go ahead with a two-part movie finale that's going to be out at some point in the future. Maybe they'll do something similar with House of Cards, just to kind of wrap things up really neatly, because that is Netflix's pattern to make one announcement and then backpedal a little bit.
Yeah.
But as it is, I think you got to view the season 5 finale as the series finale of House of Cards.
Now, Jeremy Piven did you mention the series he was on? Is that stopped right now, too?
They're determining.
Yeah, they're determining. There's no news on that specifically at the current time. Certainly, you can head to TV Guide if anything does pop up. But as of right now, it's continuing, and we don't have any other news about that.
Does Hollywood expect, I mean, the last couple of weeks, nearly every day, a new name comes out of somebody who's either a producer, a director, a writer, an actor. Is Hollywood in sort of a panic mode right now?
I'd say so. And frankly, this is probably overspeaking a little bit, but I think rightly so. You know, these are allegations that aren't necessarily new allegations, but it's a floodgate that's been building up for the entirety of Hollywood, frankly.
Yeah.
And it's finally all coming out, and people are actually discussing it and taking action. I think we're in the first stage of those reactions, where people are making immediate gut reactions. We'll see how that pans out in the coming weeks and months as people start to have more specific discussions about policies and how to deal with these things and how to take forward-thinking action about these things. But yeah, right now, if you're somebody that got away with it for a couple of decades, you should be scared.
Yeah, yep.
I think, you know, it took people a while to remove Bill Cosby stuff from TV, and now it's like they don't even wait for a verdict. It's just if there's anything that people are talking about just until further notice, gone.
I mean, there's that. I think also, frankly, with a lot of these cases, without speaking to any one in particular, a lot of them have been open secrets for a very long time. People have talked about them. They've rumored about them. They even felt like they knew about them. So we do obviously are in a society where you need to go to trial and you need to have some sort of you're innocent until proven guilty. But these are things like the Weinstein thing that people knew about for decades. So once they happen, I think people were ready to take action. They just wanted somebody to say something. They didn't want to be the first person to say something.
Alexander, we only have a minute, but this story is very curious to me. They're shutting down Westworld temporarily. Mm-hmm. Because one of the actors had some sort of a medical emergency, but we don't know who the actor is, and we don't know what the medical emergency is.
I mean, you pretty much summed it up, frankly. Westworld's a pretty mysterious show, and they released very mysterious information about this. We believe it's a minor actor on the show, you know, that it's not one of the major cast members, but at the same time, they had an injury offset that definitely has impacted filming in some way. They haven't released the name of the actor. They've temporarily held down production. Right now, Westworld Season 2 is supposed to premiere in 2018. As far as we know, it still will. But it's kind of up to HBO and their respect for the actor to decide whether they're going to release more info on that.
They've gone out of their way to use the phrase, a performer in a reoccurring role, as not to scare us and think, uh-oh, it's Anthony Hopkins, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, no spoilers, but it's probably not Anthony Hopkins.
I don't think it is Anthony Hopkins. Nope.
Yeah, he didn't meet the best fate at the end
of the season. No, he did not.
Yeah, but it definitely seems like it's for anybody who watched the first season, there's all these loops and these things that happen over and over. So even somebody in a very small role can show up in multiple scenes throughout the season, depending on where they travel. So clearly, for a show that is tightly filmed and that specifically created, to have anybody at any level disappear can heavily affect the production.
It was such a pleasure to meet you. Alexander Zalbin, managing editor of TV Guide. You can go to tvguide.com or follow him on Twitter, A Zalbin, A-Z-A-L-B-E-N. We only have a minute here, but can you tell us about how you got slapped in the face by John Cleese at one point in your life?
Sure. He was a visiting professor when I was at Cornell, and he came in, he gave my sketch comedy group some tips on a sketch that we were doing. We were taking a picture afterwards, and he said something to us. I think it was like, okay, face forward, or, you know, everybody look at the camera. And I made some snarky comment back, and he laughed and gave me a little love tap on the face, but he is the most enormous man in the world. So it basically was like smack right across the face.
And but so it, far, it he's the only honor. Member of the Pythons to slap you? Nobody else has so far?
Not yet, but I'm working on
it. Okay, good. Good luck.
I hope, think I'll get there.
We hope they all get you. Alexander, thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you. Alexander Zalbin of the TV Guide. We'll find out what Steve has next on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Whew, and we're back.
That was a long break. What'd you do during the break?
I zhuzhed my hair.
Did you? I renewed my driver's license.
Good for you.